www.thebiblecommunity.com.
Good morning, everyone. Ooh, let me get used to this for a minute. I first protested standing up here, but I did. Prayer. That's one of the first things I learned as a Christian. I've basically been in and out of church my whole life, but one of the first things I ever learned to do as a Christian was to pray. Even, you know, as young as our toddlers downstairs, we're teaching them process and procedure for being in the house of God and how to connect to God and learning who God is through prayer. So that's what we're going to end up talking about. I wanted to share, if it's okay this morning, a little bit of my personal story. Some of you know that I had a son that passed away 5 years ago this June. Some of you don't know that story, but I'm going to talk about it this morning a little bit. More because I don't necessarily need you to know my personal story. We all have hurts. We've all had loss in our life. We've all dealt with that just heartbreaking, wrenching moment where you just don't feel like God is there. And so I want to share this story with you because I'm always so encouraged when I talk about how God showed up in those very difficult hours for me. So on June 10th, 5 years ago, it was 4:30, 4:45 in the morning. It was a church day. And I woke up early, and I don't know why I woke up early. It was before the alarms, and I was extremely agitated. I don't know why. Extremely just agitated and angry and fatigued in my body. I didn't know what was going on, so I got up, walked around for a little bit, tried to go back to sleep, and I couldn't. And I started, like, getting very angry. Like, all of a sudden, I'm tripping over something as I'm walking into the bathroom, and words are coming out of me that most Christians don't say, but they were coming out of me. And I'm like, I'm trying to catch myself, and I'm like, why? Where is that coming from? Why am I so angry? Well, I've woken Thomas up now, and I'm starting to throw things and knock things off the bathroom cupboard. It was a very weird thing that was happening inside of me, and I didn't understand it. Our lives at that time were butterflies, daisies, and rainbows, and I had no reason to be this mad or this upset. But anyway, Thomas got up with me, and he's trying to pray over me. He's trying to hold me, and it's so painful for him to touch me. And at the same time, I feel like if somebody doesn't hold me, I'm going to fall into a bunch of different pieces. So we kind of talked it out. He's like, I don't know what's wrong. What can I do for you? I don't know. I feel like I'm falling apart. I feel like I'm having some kind of weird breakdown or something. Please help me. And so we get downstairs, and he gets me something to drink, and I'm sitting there on the couch. He's like, well, do you want to go to the hospital? Do you need the doctor? I'm like, I feel like I need a doctor. I feel like I need to wait. So I waited a few minutes, and an hour goes by, an hour and a half, 2 hours go by. And it kind of calmed down. It kind of eased a little bit. I just laid perfectly still. Something was definitely processing through my body. I don't know why God allowed it, but it would be almost 4 hours later in that day that I would find out that my son had left the earth at 4:30 that morning or 4:20 that morning, and I had woke up at that very moment. Why God allowed me to feel that or to know that, I still don't know. I believe it was for purpose and for promise. I don't know why I had the privilege of feeling pain when he took his first breath and feeling that pain when he took his last. But it's always been a point in my life that I can go back to. It's always been a point where I can go back and say, this isn't hard, that was hard. This is not scary. That was scary. But the one thing, even beyond my son passing away, was why was God so ready to prepare me? Or did he? Or was it just something natural that I felt as a mother? I don't know. I don't know what it was. To this day, I don't know for what purpose it was. But it left a lasting impression. So, you know, a couple of days go by, and of course, we're devastated. It's undescribable when you lose a child. There's just no way to catch your breath. I don't think I exhaled for probably a week after. So we begin to walk out this journey of grieving and mourning. Our church family gathers around us. Our family gathers around us and, you know, go God. We're going to pray. We're going to make sure all of this stuff is, you know, in order. And you're not going to fall by the wayside. I've known some people that have lost children, and they tend to rebuild their lives separate from their spouses or their other children. I've seen where it, like, turmoil takes over, and people can't recollect themselves after such a loss. And so Thomas and I were like, that's not going to be us. We're not going to divorce over this. We had friends that had just divorced over the loss of their son. At the church we were at, believe it or not, had two people had lost their sons in this church. And when they announced the second one, that our friends weren't going to be there that day because their son had passed away through the night in a car accident, Thomas and I became very, very upset for this family. We didn't know them well. It was a big church. We didn't know them well, but we had talked to them, and we had seen their son once or twice. And I'm like, that is never going to be my phone call. That is just heart-wrenching for that family. I can't stand it. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say. That's never going to be my phone call. And we left church right after church that day, and we were mourning for this family. And sure enough, a few weeks later, then I do get that phone call. It is my phone call. And so we had to learn how to process that and be healthy. I mean, you can get through just about anything, but I don't know how anybody can get through those kind of losses and those kind of things without a Savior, without Jesus there to pick up the pieces and soften the heart. So we had a plan. We were going to walk this grieving and this mourning out, and we were going to have a story afterwards, which is one of the reasons I'm telling this story today. We were not going to get divorced, although we came probably closer than we ever have to just because it takes so much out of you. Sounds kind of cliche, but you just don't care. You don't care if they come and tell you you're evicted or they're repoing your car or, you know, your mom doesn't love you. And it just didn't matter. You don't care about anything. And so we came very close to divorcing through this process. Like I said, it's only been 5 years, and we're still figuring some of this out as we go along, and those dates hit us, and we have to stop and remember. But we were going to be healthy, and our church family gathered around us, and we began this process just randomly. Getting up in the morning was the first part, trying to get myself up. My sister had volunteered to stay with me for a few weeks after this happened. And for Thomas, his healing came in. His healing came in being alone. He didn't want people around. And of course, I'm from a big family, and then we have our church family, and so there's constantly people there. There's constantly noise and movement. And nobody could ever find Thomas. We would find him sitting in the car in the garage. We'd see him sitting in the car out on the street. Like, he just didn't want the noise. And I needed the people. I needed people to talk. I wanted to talk about David. I still want to talk about David. I wanted people remembering him and saying, remember when, or he did this. He was a very funny guy, and he had a lot of friends. But with that being said, one of the first questions I had for God is, hey, is he in heaven? The people that knew David knew that he used to be a Christian. He was older when he decided that he really wanted to test his faith, and he really wanted to know what he believed and why he believed it. And so he started on a journey of studying all these other religions, Buddhism, Judaism. He'd get books, he would read, he would go talk to people, and he would give it all that he had to make sure that what he believed and what he had been taught was his truth. He gave everything he had to finding out that everything else was a lie. So it was a journey for him. And so for me, I needed to know that David was in heaven. My pastor was one of the first people at our door that night when we got that phone call, and the very first thing he said to me was like, let's get it off the table, he's in heaven. And I trusted my pastor, but it just didn't go deep to me. It's like, yeah, that's great, but I want to hear that. Oh, I want to hear that from God. it better not take off. Start walking. So I wanted to hear that from God, and people that would come around like, oh, he's in heaven. Don't worry, he's in heaven. But they didn't know the journey that he had taken to find his truth, and I did, and I wanted to make sure he wasn't lost out there somewhere. I wanted to know that he found his way back. And so my first question to God was, is David in heaven? And I started praying. It's the only thing I knew how to do. Been in church most of my life, in and out of church, have a great relationship with God. I know that I can find him through prayer. And so I started praying, but my prayer was a little bit different than some of the prayers I had said in the past. My prayer was more of a, it was more of a prayer of war, of fighting. I demand answers, and for some reason I felt like God owed me an explanation for taking my son. And when I say taking my son, God did not take my son. God received my son that day. The earth took my son. But I say that to just that God was, I needed to hear from God that David was in heaven. And so people would tell me that, and I'd be like, that's nice, thank you, I love you, David was a great person. In my prayer time, I was warring like, you better show up right now. Everything I've ever learned, everything I've ever heard, everything I've ever believed about God and Jesus is on the line right now. God, you better show up. It was that kind of prayer. It was warring for answers, and I needed to know that he was there somewhere, that in the midst of all of this, my God was still close by me. So about 3 days of praying like that, excuse me, and my sister and I were sitting at the kitchen table about 3 days after the memorial, and there's this guy standing outside of our house, and he's just pacing back and forth. He's got tattoos all over his body. He's got a tank top on. He's just kind of, you know, kind of rugged looking young person. And he's pacing back and forth, back and forth. And my sister says, this guy out here is like, he's kind of scaring me. Like, I'm watching him pace back and forth and for about 20 minutes now. And I said, well, we should tell Thomas. So we get Thomas's attention, and he starts to go out. We had this big foyer in the front of our house. And as Thomas is getting up to go out and see what this guy is doing in our yard, this guy has now walked up and stepped inside of our house. And I'm just livid. I'm sitting at the kitchen table and all prayed up, right? And I'm just livid how rude he is. How dare him? Like, who does he think he is? What is, you know, what's going on here? And so he steps in, and I'm still sitting back at the table, and he's like, what? Did somebody die here? Oh, those words started coming out of my mouth again. Like, who do you think you are? That is so rude. That is so inappropriate. You know, we've had a loss here. And he goes, I'm sorry, that sounded gruff. I've been outside your house for about a half an hour now worrying with God because he wants me to come in and tell you something, and I'm afraid to tell you. I've never done this before. And so I'm like, I'm still sitting at the table, and now Thomas is talking to him, and Thomas is great with people. Anybody that knows Thomas knows he can talk to, and he could talk to a rock and find favor with it. He's great with people. Me, not so much. It takes me a while to find my little niche. But so this guy, whom we'd never met, who had no idea who my son was, starts ministering to Thomas about David, about who he was, and there's no way he could have known who David was. He starts talking about your son loved nature. He was with God. He was closer with God when he was fishing and hunting and camping than any other time of his life. He's good. Hundreds of people are going to know Christ because of your son's time here on earth. You are going to, God has heard your prayer. Your son is safe and sound in the arms of his Savior. He's saying things like, I don't know, he read David's mail, and God answered my prayer through this stranger. And he hugged us. Well, by this time, now he's talking about David, so I'm there. I like to talk about David. So now I'm there, and I'm standing here, and I'm still not sure that I'm liking him. But the more he starts talking about my son, the more I'm like, what, you know, who is this guy? Where did he come from? What's happening here? So he proceeds to talk about David and David's friends and how David changed the life of everybody that he ever met. And, you know, people are going to go to heaven because of his time here, that he was in heaven, that he didn't suffer. That was the hugest thing. He was up camping. He loved to do that with just a pocket knife, and he had friends that loved that, and they would go up really high in the mountains, and they would make fishing poles out of sticks and catch fish, and then they would make rotisseries. The last picture that I got of him that night was when he had been up camping was they had made a spick, is that what it's called, of some kind, and they had this trout like on this stick, and then it was over a fire, and they had cut it open, and it was stuffed with mushrooms and berries or whatever. Well, something poisoned him. That's how he passed away. However, so he stands there, and I start looking at him, and I realize that these tattoos that are on his body, they're scriptures. There's hundreds of scriptures tattooed all over this guy. His arms, his shoulders, I mean, he was a broad guy. There were Psalms, Proverbs. There was one from Thessalonians, and I'm really sorry that I don't remember what it was, because to this day that one bothers me. Like, what did that say? But he was just covered in tattoos. And he prayed over us. He wrapped his arms around both of us. By the way, my sister sitting at the kitchen table is not a believer. She's not a Christian. And she thinks we're all wacky now. So he gets his big burly arms around us and he hugs us. And Thomas and I are just bawling. And he's reassuring us that there was no pain, that David didn't suffer, that his spirit met Jesus way before his body stopped reacting to pain or whatever it was. And he prayed over us, and he walked away, and we didn't see him again for, it was probably a year later. What we did notice, there were times where we would go outside. David's car was parked in our driveway for that first year, and we would notice handprints on it. And it's like, gosh, I wish the kids would leave the car alone. And a year later, this guy shows up again. We thought it was an angel. I'm like, oh my goodness, you know, an angel. How miraculous. It was kind of good to see him again, and then kind of not, because I really wanted him to be an angel. He still could have been an angel. He probably is an angel. But you know, it's just you have a vision in your head of what an angel looks like and how that's going to go down. So it didn't go down like that. So like a year later, he shows up, and he knocks on the door to talk to Thomas and just see how we're doing. He goes, I hope you know I've been praying for you every day that I stop by. I lay hands on the car and I pray over it. We had never seen him again in our neighborhood, but he was praying over the car every day over our family by using laying on of hands of the vehicle. And so we saw him a couple of more times, and then we were getting ready to move here, and he was moving out of the neighborhood, and he just kind of stopped and said goodbye and good luck to us and gave us a number where we could always reach him if we ever wanted to talk to him. He was just as blown away about being used by God as I was blown away that somebody would obey God that way. I mean, have you ever had God tell you, go talk to that person, or go tell that person that, or go do that for that person? It's easy when you don't have to look at that person. If God's just like, hey, buy that person's groceries behind you, that's easy, and then walk away. But when God's telling you, go tell that person I love them, or go tell that person this or that, that's harder. That's harder to do. And so I'm very grateful in my life that this young man had the courage to do what God was telling him to do on our behalf. So God showed up. God showed up twice. The first time, I'm sure, still not really sure about. The second time, I am very sure that my insisting and demanding that God show up, I need to know that he's here in proximity with me, and that David was in heaven, and God orchestrated that for me. For me. He did that. God did that for me so that I could take a step forward and exhale. My son's in heaven. That's what I needed to know. His life was as valuable as I always thought it was as a mom. He touched everybody's lives that he was involved in. His friends gathered around us like none before. We had more young people in our house day to day than we did people our own age. These friends of David's were just coming in and telling us stories, and we love him, and he's our brother, and we're going to hang out here. And still to this day, we hear from his friends. We still hear from our church family that says, hey, we haven't forgotten. We remember, and we walk with you. We're 5 years past that. That situation in my life, that time in our lives, it cracked our foundation. We were Christian. Like I said, our lives were daisies, butterflies, and rainbows. We were in a good place in life. We, God forgive me, had arrived. We were living well, and we were happy, and our kids were healthy, and everything was just so wonderful that you're just not prepared to get a phone call like that. However, that cracked our foundation. And again, the only thing I know how to do, the first thing I ever learned how to do was pray about it. Just pray, pray, pray. Somewhere along the line, God started building something that was different than before. First of all, I never get to be the person that I was before. I'm this new person. I have this new way of handling life. Everything is new and different. I don't ever get to go back and be who I was before that moment. But I'm going to be okay, and I'm healthy. And, you know, we've made it past these really hard years. It doesn't ever get easier that I've lost David. It's just easier to go visit it instead of having it constantly visit me. Like, spiritually, I was so strengthened by just having God show up those two times. But also, throughout this walk, God would show up and somebody would just say something that would minister to us, that would get us through the next hour or the next hour. And spiritually, I was very strengthened by the whole ordeal, and still am daily when I think about that. I don't have any fear. I'm not afraid to do anything. I'm not afraid to hear anything. Death really did lose its sting when Jesus came, and I'm not afraid spiritually to do anything God says, or anything I read, or anything I learn. I can look at that and go, I'm not afraid of that. That's not scary for me anymore. But emotionally and physically, like I said, our foundation had been cracked, and we didn't know yet. You know, when you have a tragedy in your life, you build from that tragedy on. You don't go back to that baseline. When it's a tragedy, when it's a heart-wrenching, life-changing tragedy, your life starts building from that point up. So you're building on something that's not really strong. You're building on something that's not really solid, that hasn't been weathered in prayer and church and the Word. If you were emotionally abused as a child, everything you built from a child on was built on that abuse. Or no matter what your situation is, when you've had tragedy, you kind of build from that point on, and it's a cracked foundation, and we have to learn how to get back to praying through even those little things that we don't feel are going to have big impact. Like so many things you let go. You let go of so many things. It might be your housework. You might stop working. I was lucky enough, I have all summers off. David passed away the day after I got out of school for the whole summer, so I had that whole summer. you know, Thomas and other family members had to get back to work, and how they walked it out was different. But we were building on something that we had become too tired and too exhausted to strengthen, to pray in those cracks, to build strength in those places where we were very weak. Physically, it weakened me to the point that for the first time in my life, I was dealing with anxiety and depression. And that was probably the second year, because they said the first year was the hardest. And then the second year came and it wasn't any different. And then, you know, so things start happening. So physically, I'm a mess. Spiritually, I believe God can do anything. And that's a weird place to be, because I'm over here falling apart going, yes, I know God loves me. Yes, I know God can do that. Yes, I know that's true. But over here, I'm still just building on that. On that broken foundation part. So what I find is, what I find is that I've got a lot of dry places in me now. I'm on the third year, the fourth year, and there's a lot of dry bones, and there's a lot of things that I've let go too long, and there's a lot of things I no longer pray about, and I still pray. I'm not out drinking and sinning. I'm still walking through some of this as a Christian, but I'm dry, and I just don't feel like there's any oil. There's just nothing to bring that prayer to life. And so I start, what do I know? The only thing I know how to do, I pray. I pray. Okay, I'm recognizing now, God, that we are in, you know, our second year, going into our third year, and we are dry, and we are tired, and we are exhausted. So exhausted. Just thinking about it is exhausting. But there comes a switch up a year after David passes away. Now, reminding you that we're on this broken foundation that we're trying to fill in with prayer and God, and get back to a place where we know that we know that we know that we know. How many of you know when somebody passes away that you love dearly, you don't know that you know that you know that you know? You just start questioning all kinds of things. And for that, I'm ashamed, but God was very gentle with us as we asked some hard questions and said some hard things to him. He's not afraid of hard questions. He's afraid of you not bringing hard questions. So if we can just take a look, I hope we have a slide for this. Well, before we do, let's just look at something else. So a year after David passes away, we decide that he has a hip surgery, and it's botched. It doesn't work. He had some pins in his hip from an older time. He ends up with a botched hip surgery and ends up losing his job of 25 years as a general manager, because he can't do the things he was doing before, and went on permanent disability, which was huge for us. It was a role reversal for us. And I love you, honey, but you are not good at being a housekeeper. Anyway. So I'm going to work, you know, I have to pay for insurance, and he's kind of home, and he doesn't have a clue what to do. And so now mentally, and we are starting to, like, break down, like we're not even in our same roles anymore, and not knowing how to function through those things. But shortly after he lost his job, we're like, well, we have kids in Wisconsin. And we didn't make any major decisions that first year, but on the second year, after he didn't heal from his hip surgery, we started talking about maybe moving to Wisconsin. We have a son here who announced that he was going to have a baby, and Thomas has kids here with grandkids. And so we decide that we're going to move to Wisconsin. And on our way to Wisconsin, my mom falls. My mom and dad are both 80. They're very healthy. My dad plays golf 3 days a week. They've always been in really good health, but my mom falls and breaks her hip. And so as soon as we get here, I jump on a plane and go back, you know, to help mom and help the family get mom situated. And two months after she healed, so it was probably like 6 months after the hip surgery, She was healed, and she had two strokes in a row, and I had to go back again. And so there's just all this turmoil happening now, and everyone in my family is getting sick. After she had the two strokes, she fell in the hospital and hit her head and had a head injury. They put her on hospice, and I go back again, and to try to help everybody get situated and help mom. And they find out that the bleeding had stopped on her brain, so they take her off of hospice, but she'll never recover. She'll be in convalescent for the rest of her life. Some days are good. Some days she remembers us. Some days she doesn't remember us. But shortly after that, and finally getting settled and like, okay, I can breathe, my dad has a heart attack on the golf course, drives himself home, almost dies, ends up the next day having a quadruple bypass surgery. He's doing great. He's back playing golf and everything. But while I was there, I get a phone call that my husband has had a very grim diagnosis. And so I'm literally standing in the middle of my bedroom at my dad's house, and I'm like, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to hear of another family member that needs me, that is sick, that is broken, that is hurt, that is going to die. I'm still trying to figure this out over here on this cracked foundation, and I'm building all this stuff on top of it. So I'm standing there, and it's like, I just am dry. Nothing feels like it's reaching God. I know he's here. What am I missing? And I began to pray. And God showed me this verse, Isaiah 54. It's talking about this particular verse is talking about it's addressing the desolate and barren people of Israel. They're in captivity, and the prophet Isaiah is telling them to sing. Now, God, sing, O barren one who did not bear, break forth into singing and cry aloud. You who have not been in labor, for the children of the desolate one will be more than the children of her who is married, says the Lord. Enlarge the place of your tent, and let the curtains of your habitations be stretched out, and do not hold back. Lengthen your cords and strengthen your stakes. For you will spread abroad into the right and to the left, and your offsprings will possess the nations and will people the desolate cities. Fear not, for you will not be ashamed, not be confounded, for you will not be disgraced, for you will forget the shame of your youth and the reproach of your widowhood. You will remember no more. For your maker is your husband, the Lord of hosts, is his name, and the Holy One of Israel is your Redeemer. The God of the whole earth he is called. For the Lord has called you like a wife deserted and grieved in spirit, like a wife of youth when she is cast off, says your God. For a brief moment I deserted you, but with great compassion I will gather you. In overflowing anger for a moment I hid my face from you, but with everlasting love, I will have compassion on you, says the Lord, your Redeemer. So this is the first thing that the prophet tells these guys to do is sing. And when I read that, I kind of smiled, like, I can't think of one time in any of this news that I've received about any family member that I felt like just throwing up my hands and singing Jesus Loves Me or Blessed Redeemer or any other thing. There just wasn't a song in me. So I kind of smiled, and I started reading this, and I realized that they're referring to the people of Israel as they're comparing Israel to a barren woman that hasn't labored. And I mean, you know that back in those days, it was just a terrible thing to be a barren woman. You had to bear children, I guess, to have place. Anyway, break forth in singing. That was the word that I got. And I got to tell you, it's not the first thing you think of. The first thing you think of is maybe writing a letter, maybe running away, maybe questioning who you are, where you are, or what you're doing. But singing wasn't the first thing that I thought of. But after reading this and looking at the scripture and looking at the people of Israel, they were in a dry and desolate place. They didn't have hope. They certainly didn't have a song. And I don't know how long they had been in captivity. I didn't research the verse completely. I was more looking at the singing out into our desert and singing out into our dark places. But God did allow them to be in captivity, and now he's telling them, if you want to grow out of this in order for me to grow my family, you are going to have to move first. Stretch out your tents, make room for people. So I started making room for God. I started making room. I'm going to make more time to hear from God, because I am not going to go down this way. I'm not going to go out cold and uneducated to what's mine. So sing out seems like a very unnatural thing to do, but sing out I did. And I remember there was a moment when David passed away, and there were probably 20, 25 people in the house, and there was some very quiet music playing in the background, but I caught wind of one of the songs that was on. And immediately, my hands went up in the air, and I just started crying, and I was singing this song. Well, everyone in the house knows me well enough to know that my love language is, if I'm up doing something, you're up doing something. That's my love language. So work side by side with me. I don't need words of affirmation, just work side by side with me. So the minute my hands go up, everyone in the house just stops and go, oh, we better sing. And everybody just puts their hands up and starts singing. It was a very humorous moment. And literally kind of broke that heaviness off of all of us. And then remembered that when I read the scripture about just singing out into those desolate places, singing out into the desert, everybody has barrenness in them. We all have something in us that we've let dry up, that we have a gift we haven't used, a word we haven't told. We all have something in us that needs to be relooked at and said, you know what, you're not going to be dry anymore. I'm going to pray into that. I'm going to speak into that. That's going to be alive in me. I want to bear fruit for God. How many of you want to bear fruit for God? I want to bear fruit. I don't want to be dry. And I certainly don't want an act of something that God thought I could get through so much that he showed up for me. I certainly don't want to disappoint him. I was talking to Pam the other day, and I said something, and it caught me when I said it, because I didn't think. I'm an extrovert. I don't always think before I speak. But Pam does. She's an introvert. She listens to my 5 rough drafts, and then she has one final word. Anyway, I said to her, like, yeah, I don't know what God is doing. I'm not sure what God is doing, but I want to be really careful how I react to it, because when I get to the other side of it, I don't want to be embarrassed for how I acted. I don't want to have to apologize to God for being a baby kind of thing. And when I said that, she goes, yeah, that's really good. And I go, yeah, that is really good. Like, be careful in those moments in your life when something's going wrong or something's going horribly bad, that you're not misbehaving, that you're not angry, that you're not just not going to deal with it, that you're going to really, God? How many times have we said that? Like, really, God? This too? Like, just want to be very careful about that, because on the other side of it, and God's going to say, look, I brought you through again, and you're going to be, yeah, but I said this, and I acted this way, and I pouted, and I didn't read my Bible, and blah, blah, blah. And so I didn't want to be embarrassed. Whatever God was doing in that moment, I didn't want to be embarrassed when he got me to the other side of it, and I said, oh, I didn't act very nice. I didn't trust you or believe you through it. So Anyway, with that being said, there were dry places in me, and I was going to meet God on every one of them. So I loved that that line in that song, that God be everywhere that I am. I want God to be everywhere that I am, and I want him to fill every hole and every dark place and every dry place. And I don't want to be caught off guard. I don't want to be put in a situation where God knows and thinks and has built me for that time and moment to help someone or to help him or to work with him and not be prepared, spiritually not be prepared to take on whatever it is. So, sometimes your barrenness, dryness, that desert place, it may not even be by your own doing. If you think about Joseph, he shared a dream with his brothers. They pretty much caused him havoc and barrenness for many, many, many years to come. That was of his it wasn't of his own doing. And then there was David with Bathsheba, and that ended up being a horrible ordeal where David had caused his own barrenness with God, and he lost sons because of it. So his barrenness was caused by displeasing God. It doesn't matter by whose doing you find dry places or things in your life that you would like to bring back to life. It doesn't matter. What matters is that God has more for us. He wants us to have all that he has for us. And it honors him when we are in a place where we can receive all that God has for us. Many times he has to wait out us to grow to that area where he can then bless or give us our heart's desires. But I do know one thing. If we are to move forward, regardless of what God's called us to do or what our giftings are or what journey we are on with God, we need to be aware of the enemy that is always prowling around like a lion seeking whom he may devour. And so we have to be aware that when something happens that takes us out or causes dryness in our spiritual walk, that there is an enemy, and he's a real adversary, and he would love nothing more to take each one of us out, because we all have greatness in us. We all have things that God can use us for. And if we don't keep ourselves in a place that's ready, and we don't keep ourselves in a place where we're willing, then God can't use us. And so I wanted to talk about prayer now. Excuse me. There's so many different kinds of prayers in the Bible. And I had some of them brought up. They're there? Okay. So these are the ones that I found just by studying some different study Bibles and stuff. Some say that prayer is mentioned like 650 times in the Bible, and then it breaks it down into different translations. So there's probably more, but there's 8 different kinds of prayers. We have them up there. So we have the prayer of faith, and you can find that in James. The corporate and agreement prayer is when we all agree on something together, we all agree on growth, and we all go home and we all pray about growth, and that's when we corporately decide we are all gonna pray about the same thing and we have the same heart for the same results. Request and supplication is the prayer that I'm more talking about today, just needing and demanding that God show up. There's a prayer of thanksgiving, of consecration. There's a prayer of intercession, a prayer of worship, and a prayer of imprecation. I didn't know what that was. I'm still not really clear on what that is, but that is a prayer where you can pray, I don't think you should pray, where you pray bad things to happen, Pastor. be warned to not pray that way. But there must be at some point and some place in the Bible where somebody was allowed to pray that they would get what was coming to them, I suppose. Maybe something to look up. It was interesting to me. So those are the different kinds of prayers. I don't know that when you pray that you're ever really consciously thinking of, oh, it's this kind of prayer. But I know that when I'm worshiping, I'm praying. And I know that when I'm being grateful and thankful and calling God out on all of the great and wonderful things he's done in my life, I know that's a prayer of thanksgiving. Some of the other ones, there's a faded line. Praying is praying to me, and it's communicating with God. It's the only way that you can communicate with God. Some people get hung up on prayers, and you know, they're too hard, or you don't know what to say, or I just talk to God. I'm like, oh boy, here we are. I got this. I don't know what to do. I need your help. More like I'm talking to one of you face to face. But through prayer, through a lot of prayer, I feel like I have my feet on some solid ground. I love Portico Church. I love being here. I haven't got to settle in and grow much because of the activity that I've had to take care of back home. But be aware that the enemy, he only knows what you tell him. God knows everything. He knows what you're going to say before you say it. The enemy doesn't. So with your confession, you have to be careful what you tell the enemy and what foothold you give him, because he doesn't know that financially you're struggling, but when you start going, I'm sick of being poor, I don't want more of my money, blah, blah, blah. Well, the enemy hears that, and that becomes his tool for his attack. I kind of wanted to go into just a little bit about the prayer. Something that I learned, I must have been a really young girl in church, and we were talking about marking the enemy. And it was one of those lessons that just really stuck with me. And so in finishing up, okay. So, in filling up those dry and desolate and desert places, praying, finding out where you're at, be self-aware. Prayer brings self-awareness. It's good to know what your strengths are and maybe what some of your weaknesses are. It's good to be self-aware. And so through prayer, be self-aware of what it is that you need to refill and recharge in your life. And be aware that the enemy would love to take you out. And with that being said, I just thought it would be interesting to think of, I'm going to go back to this for just a minute. Can you just give me a minute here? I would love to go back to there we are. It was a point that I wanted to make earlier when we were talking about being dry and desolate. And, you know, the story of the Israelites is different than maybe what our barrenness would look like or our desert would look like. And to be aware that it's not necessarily one thing, that barrenness has many faces. You can be barren in your health, which is something that Thomas and I are struggling and taking back ownership of. You can be barren in your hearts, maybe a relationship. You can be barren in your homes, and even your relationships with God can be barren if you're not communing with him and listening and talking with him. So with that being said, marking our enemy, marking those things and calling them out brings strength to your walk. It brings momentum to following through. And so do we have that? We do have a big red X. To take and mentally see yourself and physically marking an X, think of something in your life that you just really wish was better, your relationship, your finances, your home, whatever it is, something that you know you could do better. There's a dryness. And I want you to just mentally think about it and then just mentally mark an X on it. So I'm just going to go through a couple of them. Bitterness, I mark an X on you. You have no place in my life. Financial problems, I mark an X on you. You have no place in my life. And as you go through and you pray and you get direction and then you see these things that God is revealing to you, take a moment to mentally look at it. Put an X on it and mark it out of your life. And that's where you start to pray. And God will reveal to you things that will amaze you. I've learned so much about myself. More in the last year than I have the years before. And I don't feel like I'm building on a broken foundation anymore. I feel like we are solid and moving forward. I continue to mark an X on the things that I won't have in my life. And I'm insistent. I'm not going to be bitter. I'm not going to be lost. I'm not going to walk through life hurt. I'm going to heal relationships, family members, friends. I'm going to make sure if I have a relationship, I've spent time with it. I love it. I treasure it. So physically thinking about those things that you want to get rid of, that you will no longer accept in your life, and just mentally seeing yourself put an X on it, that you're no longer going to allow those things in your life, and fill yourself up with prayer. And allow God to touch those deep and those dark places in you that maybe you haven't invited him into yet. Maybe there are places that you haven't dealt with yet. Maybe you're ready, maybe you're not. But standing still isn't an option for me. I just want more. I want to know more of God. I want to be stronger in him. I just want to keep moving and keep seeing what God is doing. And you know what? God keeps showing up. Physically, he's sending people to me, and emotionally, he's washing through me, and I don't want to disappoint him. I don't want to let him down. I want to be ready. I want to make sure I'm clear and clean before him, and that God is willing to forgive me and carry me through. So thank you for that.
Thanks for listening to the podcast of the Portico Church in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. You can find out more about our church at porticocommunity.com.